Amateur Presentation.
So, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it. And it's always fun talking about movies, but also going to the movies. My co-host, Matt Rohrbeck, and I always talk about the cinematic experience and what that means to us. And mm-hmm. before getting into your film, The Movie Man, I wanted to ask you about your own movie-going experiences, and specifically the one that made you feel most connected to going to the theater and enjoying that communal experience. It doesn't even have to be the best film you saw in the theater, but just the experience itself.
I think it has to be the first time I went to Highland Cinemas in Kinmount. And I was 11 years old, and my parents, we were camping up in the Haliburton area, and they said, we're going to take you guys to the movies tonight, and it's in a guy's house. And so we drove up the road into the woods, and you can't really see this building, and we went into this beautiful, you know, movie palace that you couldn't really tell was there, and I saw Terminator 2. And it was more of, you know, the experience of going into this building. And it was also a great movie, you know, that sort of locked in my brain for the rest of my life.
Do you remember what theater you were in?
I was in, so at Highland Cinemas, there's 5 theaters. And at the time, there was only 3. So it was in Cinema 3 that I was in.
What an experience to not only have a good movie, but also, you know, tie it all into the subject at hand and that experience. Because it feels almost like every time you go to the movies, especially when you're younger and you have that impressionable quality, you're chasing that feeling. I remember in Peterborough going to see The Nightmare Before Christmas with my dad and feeling, you know, both grown up in a way, but also just being taken back by the grandeur of it all. And so, you know, those memories that we have are so important to who we are. And it's, I think, also a really important aspect of The Movie Man. So I wanted to ask you, because obviously, you know, this is partly a character study, but also at what point when you're developing a project like this, do you begin to focus on both memory and time?
Well, I think it started like when I went to Highland Cinemas and with the idea of maybe filming over 2 days to create a small piece, you know, of this place that I loved, you know, and the reverence for going to the movies that I cherished so much. And then I met Keith Stata, the movie man, and I thought, wow, there is something here. And there is a real history outside of just the building itself, but exploring the time that this man has dedicated his entire life, you know, since he was a kid, to providing this experience for generations of people. And I thought, wow, there's something else here. And that turned into, you know, 5 years and of making this film. And thankfully, Keith, to talk about time, he was such a preservationist, like everything he has kept, you know, outside of the theaters that he cleaned out across North America, to preserve all of the elements that were in these cinemas, from projectors to seats to the curtains or posters. He's also, you know, he kept all of the photographs from all of like the history of the town he's from, which is Kinmount, Ontario, and the films he made, you know, as a kid. And I was very lucky to have this archive of material to work for. I'm not sure if that answers your question about time, but
it makes you think about sort of, you know, like you're looking at this from the point of view of this movie theater in the middle of a forest and, you know, this eccentric, but also extremely relatable and likable character, you know, at mm-hmm. the center of it all. But then you look at those bigger themes and him talking about, you know, H.G. Wells, The Time Machine, and you think about, you know, your own mortality while watching the movie, and also the history of, as you mentioned, the community. And I think that's also a very important part of this story, and how, you know, this really does feel, you know, this theater and this experience and watching it, this cinema feels like it is a touchstone within the community and a pillar of the community.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you said that, because yes, the film is about this, you know, idiosyncratic theater and its proprietor, but it is more than that. It is this look at one's life and the time that we spend in it and what we do with it. And I think looking at Keith, like, he just, time just kept coming up, and whether it was like he didn't have enough time to ever get things as right as he wanted, or over time the technology's changed, and you know, the classic, things aren't the way they used to be, and looking back on the things that he maybe have wanted to do as wanting to be a filmmaker versus having to you know, showcase movies and exhibit them, and so that really just became a recurring theme. And so I think what I'm proud of, I think, outside of sort of showing this a magical place, is, you know, looking at a person's life and reflecting on what they've done with it, you know, and in such a special way.
Yeah, and you can get that, you get that sense when, you know, obviously there are people that come and go. Obviously, you know, I thought a lot about actually Rogers when I was watching this, because the Oshawa station is kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of sort of on the edges or cusps of a forest, and you have a lot of high school students coming in, you know, every semester to do co-op. And it reminded me a lot of the theaters where, you know, you get high school students coming in, and as soon as they're, you know, fully trained, they're gone because they're graduating, and then the next generation comes in, and you can see the frustration that Keith has to, you know, train everybody again, but then he's kind of, you know, doing everything himself. Was there any reluctance in talking to Keith about the project when you were initially, you know, thinking about developing this as a film? Because I'm sure he's been approached before to make a movie. Even in The Movie Man, you have, you know, a sequence dedicated to newsreel segments and broadcasts of the past. And it's always interesting seeing those little moments again of time, you know, play out.
Yeah. And I think he, you know, when I said to him after that first weekend, would you mind if I came back and stuck around? And, you know, I think he's so busy in his own thing. Thankfully for me, you know, I really wanted to take a verite approach at filming. And the lucky thing for me is he is not like many people. He's not very aware of the camera, so I just sort of embedded myself, and he just got used to me. And I think, you know, if you've seen the film and you understand how Keith is, or he referred to me as the hemorrhoid that wouldn't go away, which I took as like high praise, you know. But we became very close, and so, you know, it was a bit of magic for me to be there. And it, part of the reason the film took a long time is I really just wanted to follow him and not interfere. And he wasn't reluctant at all. You know, he just, like I said, he's just so busy in making this thing work that he really didn't really pay attention, which is to our benefit, I think.
What about you though? When you're filming on location, and one thing I love about this movie, and I love about films of this nature, is that when we see somebody that's really good at what they're doing in their environment and the day-to-day tasks that they have, what was it like adapting to his routine?
It could be challenging, because, you know, and he, you know, when we started, he was 70, and for 70 years old, he was on the move, and it was hard to keep up. Like sometimes I'd show up and it wouldn't be, he would never sort of pause to be like, hey, how are you? And we'd talk for, it was, I would have to jump into whatever he was doing, whether it was changing a million litter boxes or fixing a projector. I just kind of jump in. So I'd throw a mic on him, get my rig set up and go. It was often hard to keep up with him, or try and, if I needed a shot, to pause or something, it was a challenge. You know, but it was great. And I sort of figured it out. Like, it's either you keep up with Keith and make it work, or don't do it, you know, because he wasn't going to pause for much.
Did he ever get mad at you in terms of, you know, maybe getting one of those dramatic shots or a moment that is kind of still? Because because you're talking about him like in the way that he's always busy, he's always on the move. It's almost like a shark where it's like you have to keep going or you'll die, or you just have to, because there's so much work to be done.
This is the thing. I mean, I said this, and I feel like someone in the film might have mentioned this, is sort of like Keith is the theater and the theater is Keith. It's like this symbiotic relationship. And if one's not working, the other one's not, you know, and when they're in lockstep, you know, you can see the magic. So I think I hate to say this, but I don't know if the theater wasn't around. I don't think Keith would be, like, because that's all he does. And, you know, there were moments where I'd love to reflect and sort of sit with the camera, but they're few and far between. I think during the pandemic, the moments that I filmed were the only times where he was sitting still.
On the phone, even, you know, him having those conversations, it felt like that was the moment where you could breathe, because even the end credits, which I love so much, where he's walking through the theater, it feels like, okay, he has to keep going, because the theater in itself is an extension of him as a person.
Yeah, no, that's amazing that you pointed that out. That final shot of the film is sort of my favorite, because it's just him and he's not talking, and it's this, you get to witness the magnitude of the place in one shot. Now, I had to do it about half a dozen times, because one, it was hard to focus, but other times he'd begin talking again and I'd be like, Keith, you can't talk, we got to go back to square one now and walk all the way back through 18,000 square foot building, you know. That's part of the charm of Keith, and part of the reason I love the movie so much.
Well, Keith is also, you know, a lover of film, but you already mentioned this as well, and it's in the movie. You know, he had aspirations to become a filmmaker. There's a great conversation about a science fiction movie where the characters wear Speedos. Yeah. Did you ever get a sense of longing from him when you were having those conversations about his past and about that potential? Because there are some moments in those movies where you can really see a voice and something coming together in a way that's so exciting, and it makes you wonder, what if?
Oh yeah, aren't those, they're so great, and I'm so glad he had them, and those films they're awesome. And they reminded me of, you know, being, you know, a kid and doing the similar things, but on like a camcorder with Lego and stop motion, you know, or something. I think he, you know, what I learned, I think, during the process was, I think he kind of wondered and would reflect on once in a while, like, if what he did was worth it. Did he deliver on his dream of making this movie going experience so special that people really enjoyed it? He's so humble. So I think the obvious answer is like, yes, like, I'm making this film because when I came here when I was 11 years old, you know, this place was magic to me and inspired me to do what I do. But I think the one thing that I think probably the most proud of, he asked me this, actually, we had a private screening in September when we finished the film at the theater. And he said in his way, he's like, well, I hope you get something out of this. And I'm like, I did. I got to sit here and watch this. And I watched like two theaters, because we filled two theaters full at his place, of people that gave him like a 2-minute standing ovation, just because they have come to that cinema for generations. And I think after that, you know, he has said to me since, after the festivals we've been in and some screenings he's attended, is like, oh, I think I did a good job. You know, I'm happy now to look back and see that I think I really did do something and provide something for people, which is so nice to see. You know, like, maybe he did want to be a filmmaker and that didn't work, but I think what he has done in his way, he's very proud of now.
Well, even the way that, you know, in the documentary, people talk about him, especially in the last few minutes of the film, and they almost break down, and you get the sense that, like, okay, well, it's not just the cinema. It's the man behind, you know, these movies and screenings and what he's done and what he's been able to keep up. And also him just being, you know, such a humane individual to, it seems like every animal that walks up every on his animal. Doorstep, whether it be cats, dogs, you know, feeding the bears, it's such a great moment. And there's something I've always wanted to ask someone who's worked in documentaries, because the conversation has come up quite a bit with animation, especially with Guillermo del Toro talking about it. Do you look at documentary filmmaking as a genre, or do you see it as the medium in which you're telling the story? Because I feel like that's a conversation that everybody relegates documentary to just simply being a genre of film.
That's an excellent question. I think it's more of the medium by which you tell the story. If it's done properly, I think, you know, this film's not perfect by any means. But what I tried to do, and the documentaries, I guess, to put it in the category that I love the most, are those character pieces that they almost feel like they're written. I feel like Keith, you know, he couldn't write this stuff, but this scene, some of the scenes I'm really proud of it, that play out so naturally. And it is that verite style where I'm not prompting him to do anything. We're not sort of, okay, this is, we're going to set this scene up. And it was really magic, whether it's him interacting with his business partner, Roland, you know,
that relationship,
which is amazing and very humorous, and or just these moments during the pandemic on the opposite side where it's quite sad. And his, I think he says, you know, he's feeding his dog some raw hot dogs and letting him, he's like, my, you know, I'm relegated to letting the dog in and out of the house. And, you know, it's very emotional and dramatic, but you can't write those things. All that to say is, like, you know, then there's some fantastical element in the film about time and the time machine, which kind of came naturally, but we worked into the narrative. I think it worked, you know, at the end. And so to answer your question, I think documentaries, I think it's more of the medium by which you want to tell this story, because they're never the full truth. It's my version of some, you know, analog piece of the truth. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
It does. And it feels like, again, when you're going into documentary storytelling, it's like, okay, well, it's like a blanket term in a way, because you know, no one documentary is the same in terms of the narrative they're telling or the focus, whether it be something that is specifically on a person or an event or a social issue. And even within that, there's a tone and a style to it. So it's all, like, even just looking at the Last Waltz poster, it's just like, The Last Waltz is a completely different experience to the Movie Man, and the Movie Man is a completely different experience to, you know, Jay Chiel's Beauty Day and so on and so forth. And so, you know, it's weird to put, you know, documentaries into what feels like forever, like a genre into itself.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So another thing that I'm curious about, you know, having made this movie, is there a quality of, you know, when you're making this film and you're thinking, okay, I'm telling this story about this man and his legacy and the theatrical experience, but then also you have the pandemic come into play. And that's something that nobody could have predicted. And obviously, even before the pandemic happened, you know, the conversation about the theatrical experience was dying. Having made this movie, were there things that you're noticing in other theaters, like The Review, which you just had a few screenings for, that are different from, say, the Cineplexes and the Landmarks and the multiplexes of Canada?
Yeah, I think that, like, to start with the pandemic, I think the pandemic, you know, to most of us wasn't a gift, especially not to small businesses and theaters, you know, independent cinemas or theaters at large, obviously. It was a gift to the film in a sense where it provided real stakes to see whether this would survive, whether Keith would survive. And it was a real struggle, a real struggle. I think now that we're a step away from the pandemic, and just what I've heard from people at screenings or even just watching the film again further away from it, is the pandemic might have been a reminder to us that this is something, this experience of getting together in a room with people and watching the movies and in a building that is independently owned and has its own sort of look and feel to it, is important. And if we want it, that experience, to continue, then we have to go to it. And, you know, going to the other night at the review, and it was sold out, and Keith was there, and we brought him in as a surprise at the end, and you could feel the magic and so many people speaking about their experience, either going to his cinema or the experience that they have or cherish about whether it's going to see, you know, their parents taking them to see Star Wars as a kid, or, you know, what we were talking about, that memorable moment. It gave me a lot of hope for, you know, independent theaters and independent cinema at large going forward.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, the pandemic affected so many people, whether, you know, they lost loved ones, you know, businesses going under. And, you know, you think about even places in Toronto, you know, I know the Royal doesn't screen as many movies as they used to. And, you know, places like the Fox, which has hundreds of years of history. And then, you know, coming out even to the Durham region, the Roxy is a great theater. And so these places, yeah, absolutely, are so important to keep going, because not just the experience, but the place themselves.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but, like, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, we saw this with, like, craft brewing, and they're like small breweries came up, and there's like an art to them, and they have their own thing. And I kind of hope the same for, you know, for cinemas, that these, having a cinema, independent cinema like the Roxy or the Fox or something, the Gorge Cinema in Allura, which we screened at recently, was amid, they're beautiful places, and the proprietors care so deeply about the movies and people having that great experience for a few hours, that that's something that, you know, another generation will think is cool, you know, and like to, and something to go and continue, you know, outside of the Cineplexes and the these places in the world, you know, to go see independent films or first run, you know, the larger studio films as well, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Something I'm curious about, the Highland Cinemas, hopefully is opening in early May. We're getting to that point now. Yes. Are you going to screen The Movie Man there? And what is that screening experience going to be like in terms of the setup? Is it going to play for a week or a couple of weeks?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the answer is yes, they are opening the first weekend in May. Keith said at a screening the other night, he's like, when I started this thing, I never thought I'd have to book my own movie. So so he is going to be booking the film. I believe it's going to begin the second week in May, and he's going to hang on to it as long as he can, or as long as people are coming to watch it, because in all of these, like, I've been very lucky to have a lot of screenings recently in Southern Ontario and across Canada, where people are asking the same question, like, can we go see this movie at the Highland Cinemas? So I feel like over the summer months this year, there'll be a lot of people coming to see it, which I'm really excited about, because without giving away the ending of the film, you know, I, watching the movie about a movie in the place that it takes place is really kind of special. And I, you know, like I mentioned, we had a private screening there in the fall, and it was really cool to, like, see the film in there and then walk out of the cinema into the place that you've just witnessed. It was kind of magic.
It's surreal. It's surreal when watching it. And even, you know, sitting down and watching a screener of it, you feel that magic and the respect and admiration you have for Keith comes through in the way that you shoot the film, but also just the way that you let him be. And I hope that when you're screening or when he's screening the movie, he doesn't call you every 5 minutes for tech support like in the film, because I really felt the anxiety of that moment where you're building to a screening and, you know, whether it be just like a small little glitch or something that you don't understand, you have to appreciate all the work that goes into screening, especially when you're changing from, you know, film to digital.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is a bit of PTSD for him, because the cinema almost closed in 2012 when they had to switch to digital. I think that was not only a big disappointment for him to have to switch financially, but there was something he still talks about is the love of running projectors and how if they did break, he always had a part for them. They always had an easy fix that these machines would run for 100 years if you let them. And then we see in the film his struggles with technology and sometimes the sort of simplistic ways he attempts to fix them.
Hey, I feel that. I mean, even doing this Zoom conversation, like the setup of it, it's like, okay, technology is so temperamental and it's obviously, you know, human error, but it complicates things in a way that adds, you know, excessive stress onto the job you already have to do. Yeah. And, you know, you forget about the love of, you know, the movie experience and watching a film with other people. And I think like that's sort of like the main key there.
Yeah.
Another thing that I was really curious about, you know, you talked about going to the Highland Cinemas as a kid. When you're going back and shooting a movie and focusing on Keith, but even the cinema itself and looking at the memory lane and the memorabilia, was there anything for you that triggered any memories growing up or nostalgia?
Definitely. I think in the cases, so for those who haven't seen the movie, is he's organized his museum by decades. And, you know, some people, if you're walking through, it would maybe just seem like a bunch of stuff, you know, but he has placed everything in there very meticulously. And there's a reason for all of it. And every time I walk through, still, he'll point something out and say why it's in there. And there's just so much thought. And I think even in the film, if you look closely, you'll learn a little bit more about him than what we actually present in the film. For me, you know, the 80s case is kind of the coolest. And I remember that even as a kid, when I went in the early 90s, and there's, you know, so we're pretty close to the 80s then still, but there is like, you know, the magazine with Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters memorabilia and the camcorder that Marty McFly had in Back to the Future. So all these things that were like, to me, you know, very close to the love I had for cinema is right there. But I feel like anyone who walks through there finds their decade and kind of get latches on to that. He does a great job, and the horror hall, which is continuously being updated. He likes to call me and talk to me about how he's trying to freak people out. So the horror hall that's in the film is similar to the one that's there this year, but if people go this year, it's going to be a whole other thing.
Well, him getting that you know, it was a limited edition, I think it was like 100 versions of it, of the Stan Winston Alien. Yeah. Was incredible. But then the thing that freaked me out, because I grew up with it, was the killer clown from outer space, one of those clowns.
Yeah.
And just thinking about, oh man, he really is almost sort of a master of horror in his own way, and almost has this playful, deviant quality to the way he orchestrates it.
He really does. And he latches onto those things too. And if he can get a rise out of someone, or like spook them, or a laugh, you know, he takes great pleasure in it. You know, it's all about the experience.
It is, and it,
like he says in the film, you know, it's all about the memories, and because that, you know, at the end, that's all we have. And you know, he has created a lot of memories for a lot of people, for almost 50 years, which is really hard to believe.
Yeah, it's amazing how time goes by. And you know, tying it all in, how time is such an important aspect of this narrative. Now, I have to ask you a controversial question, and this sure. might upset people that are listening, depending on where you are, where you're from, and your loyalties to concession stands. Is the popcorn at the Highland Cinemas truly the best popcorn going these days?
It is. It'd be have to be hard pressed to tell me otherwise. I think, you know, like I would go in there, like I said, I'd just throw a mic on him and get my camera gear and the rig and just follow him. And so and there's nothing really in Kinmount to eat. And so I would just grab a bag of popcorn. So I ate a lot of it, you know, and I still love it. But and not to give away in the film, like Keith's opinion on his how he makes his popcorn and who eats it. But I think it's just extra that much more special because of his passion for how it should be made. And I think the other members of the community, mostly being animals in the forest, that share in that popcorn as well.
Yeah, it's amazing when people, even during the pandemic, would still order movie popcorn from a movie theater. And it shows you how important that was, because I remember there was a couple of years where I was working at the Scarborough Film Festival, and one of the theaters was the Fox. And people would just come into the theater and they would just order the popcorn and leave. It wasn't even about going to see a movie. It was like the popcorn was just the main attraction.
That's so funny. And I feel like the Roxy in Uxbridge sold popcorn during the pandemic. Yep.
Oh, they did. They did.
And, which is such a great theater. And to mention the Fox and all these other independent theaters in Ontario that have shown the film, almost every one of them has either purchased something from Keith for their cinema. So in the Fox, I think there's a Simplex projector in there that Keith provided them. You know, I know the Roxy, he had provided a ton of movie posters and other memorabilia, and other at the Princess in Waterloo. John Tutt and the projectionist there would be like, I would call Keith for parts because everyone knew that he would have pieces for projectors and things to help them out. So the personal ties that all of these theater owners have had to Highland Cinemas is also really special to me, which I think has, you know, speaks to the power of the film, you know, for those types of audiences.
Yeah, even him, you know, going through those listings of movie theaters and, you know, talking about preservation, trying to take something from theaters that are no longer there and to clean them out and, you know, to do the grueling work of, you know, cleaning out fecal matter from pigeons and to restore things. Like, that hard work and dedication can only come from somebody that truly loves the cinematic experience and the movies in general. We only have about 4 minutes left, but another thing that I was so curious about, because, you know, being a physical media collector and, you know, talking about the theatrical experience and versus the home experience, and also the importance, I think, of both. I was trying to take some freeze frames of Keith's own collection of movies. And I was wondering if there was anything in his collection that stood out to you in terms of his own home collection.
So of the films that he has, you know, I think his copies of The Time Machine, Ben-Hur, and one that I was actually surprised about was City Slickers. I think there's a shot in the film that I put in there because I was just surprised that he still had it, because he has sold quite a bit of it. And I think City Slickers kind of stood out to me the most, which was kind of funny that he would have that. But I think The Time Machine was probably the one. And it's just the film that just kept coming up, like from the very first day when you see in the film, when he goes to sit down in the cinema and watch The Time Machine, like that's one of the first things we filmed. And it just kept coming up. And he continues to talk about it to this day. So yeah, it probably would have been the Time Machine and Cindy Slickers.
That's a great double bill right there. Right. I also love when he says, it's like, oh, I'm going to keep Dracula as well. Like that right. thing of like, okay, which ones can you part with? But then when you're really thinking about them, you're like, oh, you want to keep as many as humanly possible.
Yes, that is part of Keith's charm too, is like he mentions I think now there's 17 sea containers on the property full of memorabilia and film, and which makes the curation of the place, you know, you can go there another, you know, separate time and it's going to be different.
Absolutely. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Where can people find you online and find out more information about The Movie Man?
Okay. Well, you know, Eric, thank you so much for sharing and watching the film as well and being very thoughtful about it. It really means everything to me. And for to see the film, I think, you know, you can watch for listings. It's going to be in theaters in Southern Ontario and across Canada until the end of the summer. And then it'll be on Hollywood Suite, which is an amazing streaming service starting in September. And then, of course, go to the Highland Cinemas in Kenmount to see go see this film, but go see other films at Keith's. And if you want to see more of my work, my production company, Door Knocker Media, is our company in Toronto, which we're working on more films. And hopefully we can talk about that in less than a year from now.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited to hear about that. And thank you so much for taking the time to do this, but also for the film. And yeah, I'm really excited to hopefully, you know, go back to the Highland Cinemas, because the only time I've ever been there, and I grew up in Peterborough, which wasn't too far away, was back in 2006 when I saw Monster House in that theater. So,
oh, wow. Well, yeah.
Cinema too.
Please let me know. And then we'll get the extra popcorn and get Keith to give you a tour.
Absolutely. I'll have to compare the popcorn though to the Fox. We'll have to have like a Pepsi Coke challenge.
That would be amazing.
Matt, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Take care.
You too.